gave a further number of beads to the Mala. He told them that when the spirit enters your son's body, immediately place one bead at every exit to your house. This may cause the spirit to cry out in terror. If this happens, call me. The father did exactly as Bellin Sambo had said, and in this way trapped the spirit in the house. The spirit was terrified and cried, I want to escape from this house, but many powerful, terrifying, wrathful beings are preventing me. The father immediately went to Bellin Sambo and pressed him to come to the house. When Bellin Sambo arrived, he asked the spirit, how can you inflict harm on my mother's sentient beings, when you yourself cannot bear even this slight suffering? I put the beads at the door, and it blocks you from going out because you're afraid. Look how scared you are, look how terrified you are, and look how much you're suffering. You can't even bear this small amount of suffering. Why do you create so much suffering for others and kill others? See, how do you feel? If you do not promise to stop harming others, Yamataka will let you go, because Jeremji is a peaceful form of Yamataka, or Manjushu. So the beads manifested, Jeremji manifested as Yamataka at the doors to keep the spirit from leaving. The spirit replied, I follow the orders of the chief Pehar spirit. If I do not harm anyone, my powers will diminish and I will suffer. I will be punished. Please do not ask me so much of me. Please reduce the commitment, O great great Guru. Bellin Sambo told the spirit, at least you must promise me that you will not harm anyone who recites the Gandhipa Jama or makes some prayers, which is what we're going to learn. So anyone that recites that, or does Jeremji's prayers, he promised he will not harm him. He will go away. Yes, I can promise this, the spirit said. Bellin Sambo then gathered up the beads of his mother from the exits of the house, and the spirit immediately left the boy's body and fled. The boy became normal again and did not suffer further. Later, people clearly realized that anyone who recites the Gandhipa Jama or Mitsama prayers will be protected from Pehar spirits and spirits in general. Then, the fifth statue of Jeremji is called Jainam Purma. It belonged to a monastery where it was often seen by one particular sincere practitioner to rise into space and then return to its place on the shrine. Because of this, the statue became known as the Venerable One Who Rose Into Space. So Ous rose up and sat down. So we better tell him not to, because it's a low ceiling. The sixth statue was made by a government minister who was a faithful disciple of Jetsong Lama. And Jetsong Lama himself had blessed it. One day, however, an evil person out of jealousy stole the statue and, taking it along the way, threw it into a large river. Sometime later, an important merchant called Girik was traveling on horseback in the area when he noticed a brightly colored rainbow standing vertically in space, apparently emerging from the bed of the river. Thinking that this was an unusual sign, he decided to spend the night nearby. The next morning, the rainbow was still there, and so he decided to investigate further. Although the local people could see nothing in the river, Girik was not convinced. Securing himself with ropes, he waded into the icy river and dived to the bottom. There he found the statue of Jetsong Lama, radiating brightly colored rainbow lights. When he came to the surface, the onlookers were astonished to see that he had not drowned, and even more astonished to see the precious statue that he was holding. Since it was the chief merchant Gelek who retrieved the statue was subsequently called the Venerable Chief Merchant Gelek. Can somebody throw the statue into some river? I'll go get it. We call it Venerable Chief Tenermji. And I'll have Tsongkhapa named after me. See all these great ideas. I think tomorrow we'll see a lot of people going to rivers with Jeremji statues. The seventh statue came from a part of eastern Tibet where at one time there was a prolonged civil war. The local people longed for the fighting to stop, and so they went to a nearby lama who was renowned as a great meditator and asked him what they should do. He told them to construct a large statue of Jetsong Lama in their own town and make offerings and requests in front of it. This they did, and soon afterwards the fighting stopped and peace prevailed throughout the region. This statue later became known as the Venerable One Who Pacifies Conflicts. The eighth statue was named after a much revered statue of Jetsong Lama that mysteriously disappeared from Tibet. Pure practitioners with clairvoyance realized that the statue had gone to another land, far away where the ground was strewn with diamonds, where the language and customs were completely different. They also realized that the statue was benefiting the people of that land, so they decided to make another one similar to it and name it the Venerable One Gone to Another Land. And then, miracles like that are even happening today. For example, there was a great Gishi called Gishi Jatse, which was from Sarah Monastery. When he had completed his Geshe training, he withdrew to the mountains. He didn't teach, he didn't go out, he didn't collect disciples. He immediately went to the mountains and he started doing retreat. He lived like Milarepa. He focused on Jetsong Lama and Jetsong Lama's practice in a Jetsong Lama statue. That was his practice. When he died, his many disciples together, although he didn't gather, many people had faith and considered themselves disciples. When he died, his many disciples together with their large number of onlookers went to the cave to pay their respects to the body of their guru. And to their astonishment, they saw that Geshe Jatse's statue of Jetsong Lama had grown teeth and hair. I heard this account directly from these disciples, some of whom I had known myself. Then another teacher called Geshe Bandin from Namring Jambaling Monastery. At one time, he did a long, close retreat on Jetsong Lama, reciting mitzvahs on his mala. At the end of his retreat, an image of Jetsong Lama, a minute small image, appeared on one of the beads. He showed this to many, many people clearly. The verity manifested on his bead. So like that, many, many miraculous signs. Second and third statues were made by two craftsmen who were engaged in a friendly contest to see who was the more skilled one at making statues. They took the two statues to a high lama to judge. As the lama was examining them with a faithful mind, one statue spoke saying, "I am a better likeness." Then the other statue retorted, "But I am more beneficial to others." This is how the two famous statues received their names, which is the venerable one who is better likeness and the venerable one who is more beneficial to others. Then at one time, a humble practitioner tried to find the statue of Jetsong Lama for his retreat, but he was very unsuccessful. Statues of Jetsong Lama are rare in Tibet. Not rare there are lots, rare in the sense personal people trying to get them, because it was a long process to make them. It's not like today, you just go to a wonderful store and buy them. So, for him, the statue, during his retreat, he himself made a small statue and placed it on the shrine. For him, this statue was a living Tsongkhapa, and every day before beginning his meditation, he made offerings and prostrations in front of it. One day, as he rose from meditation, he noticed that the statue was gradually melting into light. As he watched, the statue suddenly smiled, rising into space, completely disappeared. The meditator was astonished and could hardly believe what he had seen. After reflecting for a long time, he decided to go to his teacher and tell him what had happened. His teacher was delighted and told him to make another statue exactly like the previous one. This he did, and this statue was called the Venerable One Who Disappeared with a Smile. So like that, and the fourth statue is named after one that belonged to a great practitioner called Nyungne Lama. Nyungne is someone that does extensive and great retreats on fasting, not speaking, prostrations. We're going to do that in the future. Mr. Ganeshan, don't forget. I'm going to teach how to do Nyungne or practice on 1,000 arm Kwanin Posa. And during that retreat, we don't talk, we don't eat, we don't drink, we do prostrations, and we recite Om Mani Padme Hum, and we dedicate it to the three lower realms. To the realm of hell, to the realm of spirits who can't eat, and to the realm of animals who cannot speak. So that trains us to realize their sufferings. And we recite Om Mani Padme Hum and dedicate it to them. So we'll do that. I did that retreat, it's 24 hours. I wish I could never have to do it again. But because during the whole retreat, I didn't meditate on Kuan Yin at all. I meditated on food. About having a drink. Can you imagine 24 hours, you all day in a group in a temple, you take the precepts in the morning from your guru, and the whole day until the next day, no sleep, no eating, no drinking, not even one drop of water. Om Mani Padme Hum and no talking to anyone. Oh my God, that would be a feat for some people I know. No talking at all. I mean, no talking. Not even, excuse me. No talking at all. Imagine that. Leave it, sit down. Then, and then focusing on Avalokiteshvara, that 1,000 arm Kuan Yin, that beautiful one we have next to Buddha, and reciting the mantra and dedicating to the three lower realms. Nyungne, N-U-N-E-Y. So we're going to do that retreat, and it's very powerful for collecting merits and dedicating to the three lower realms. And also by dedicating to the lower realms, we ourselves do not take rebirth to the three lower realms. And we focus on Kuan Yin Ma. So we're going to do that one of these days soon. It's a very beautiful thing. And it's very good to do on Kuan Yin's birthday end, in fact. So some of us who are not healthy, have diabetes, we can take 1 hour precepts, 2 hour precepts, half a day precepts, it's okay. But don't come in and say, I think I have diabetes, it's not confirmed. So that's a wonderful practice for purifying karma. And I did that before. And I tell you, because of my negative mind, I didn't want to see Kuan Yin for a long time. My negative mind was thinking, why do you make up these practices? I think I suffer even more. But it's very powerful. So we're going to learn about that, and we're going to do that here, definitely. Even if there's only 5 people, it doesn't matter. We dedicate it, we do it. Mm-hmm. It's more fun when there's many people, when you look at your friends that you should gossip with. You know, some of us, eating all day long, nonstop. Imagine those people taking precepts. Wouldn't you like to come for that, just to see that? Wouldn't you like to just come to the precept to see people who normally never stop eating and talking, stop eating and talking? Wouldn't you just love that? Wouldn't that just make you happy? Yeah. And normal fat people that don't want to do any prostrations and are lazy, and you see them prostrating nonstop. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be excellent? Wouldn't you like to bring all your beloved enemies that we love so much to that retreat? Yeah. Anyways, we're going to do that retreat. It's very beneficial. We're going to talk about it. It's very beneficial. Mm-hmm. Then, this Nyunne Lama, a person that practices Nyunne all the time, is called a Nyunne Lama, whose main practice was he did the practice in relation to Tsongkhapa. So, this Nyunne Lama did Nyunne in the conjunction of Guru Yoga Tsongkhapa. He used to keep a statue of Jen Tsongkhapa on a shrine and regarded the statue as a living Tsongkhapa. Each day he would practice Guru Yoga from refuge after dissolving Guru Tsongkhapa in his heart. Because he practiced so sincerely, he developed a very pure heart and achieved a special experience of concentration. One day while visualizing Jen Tsongkhapa dissolving into his heart, he experienced the statue actually dissolving into him, and when he arose from meditation, the statue on the shrine had completely disappeared. After this, he quickly attained many, many high realizations. News of this event spread, and the craftsman who had made the statue became very famous. Later, he made another statue of Jetsong Gaba, to which he gave the name, the Venerable One, who dissolved into the body. So like that, Jetsong Gaba manifested many, many countless miraculous signs. And those are just a few. So Tsongkhapa's practice has many benefits. Number one, we can purify or pacify our negative karma and obstacles in dependence upon the seven limbs. Asking to remain, offering, rejoice, dedication, praise of body, speech, and mind, confession, requesting, teaching the Dharma. So his practice contains 7 limbs, which is the root basis of purification. Number two, Jet Tsongkhapa can increase your life. Why can he increase your life? Because Tsongkhapa is Manjushri, who is one in nature with Shinji She, which is Yamantaka. Yamantaka is the main subduer of death. Shinji She actually means the opposer of death. So Shinji She is the name of Yamantaka in Tibetan. Yamantaka is not Tibetan, that's Sanskrit. Yamantaka. Yama is the lord of death. Tak is the one that subdues or opposes death. So Yamantaka is the one that destroys the lord of death. Which means by doing Yamantaka practice, you will gain very, very long and stable life. So being that Jeremji's main practice, one of his main practices was Yamantaka, and he achieved realization through Yamantaka. And he himself is Manjushri, which is inseparable from Yamantaka. And Jeremji himself manifests as Yamantaka at certain times. By doing Jeremji's practice, you will be able to extend your life because he is a full opponent to Yamantaka. So in fact, when you do Jeremji's practice, you do not need to engage in long life meditations such as Mithai Sankara. It's not that they're not good. You don't have to be redundant. If you focus on Jeremji, your life will be increased automatically. Number three, as he is mainly the embodiment of Manjushri, he will increase our wisdom quickly, which is the most important antidote to ignorance, the root of all suffering. The best way to protect ourselves from suffering is to increase wisdom. So the best way to protect ourselves from suffering is wisdom. Because with ignorance, out of ignorance, that is what makes us do negative actions. So the most important feature that we need to have as a Buddhist practitioner, is wisdom. With wisdom, we can develop compassion. With wisdom, we can develop, purify our negative karma. With wisdom, we can understand the text. With wisdom, we can meditate. With wisdom, we can receive teachings. With wisdom, we can understand the teachings. Without wisdom, so if you wisdom, compassion, and power, out of these three, the most important now is wisdom. So the main focus of our practice should be wisdom. Because if you want to develop compassion and you're an idiot and they teach you and you can't remember, well, guess what? You're not going to develop compassion. So you need to have wisdom. You need to have complete wisdom, penetrating wisdom. And there are seven main types of wisdom that we need to develop now and in the future. Seven main types. That is, great wisdom, clear wisdom, quick wisdom, profound wisdom, the wisdom of expounding the Dharma, the wisdom of spiritual debate, and the wisdom of composing Dharma books. Great wisdom, if we have great wisdom, we can understand perfectly, easily, and without difficulty all the objects we need to abandon, such as true suffering, true origin, and all the objects that we need to achieve, such as true cessation and advance. When we have great wisdom, we are able to easily, perfectly, and without difficulty understand any subject. And that, of course, referred to mostly to Dharma. So when we can understand Dharma perfectly, and we can practice and therefore gain enlightenment. So there are seven main types of wisdom that Jeremji can give you. That is great wisdom. Second is clear wisdom. Clear. If we can clearly distinguish the subtle characteristics of phenomena, such as the 16 characteristics of the Four Noble Truths, this indicates we have clear wisdom. Clear wisdom is not just wisdom that can memorize, understand, and pick out. Clear wisdom is understanding very, very subtle points on Buddhism. Very, very subtle points. That when you understand, you gain realization. So Jeremji can confer clear wisdom to understand subtle subjects. Then when you pray to Jeremji, you have a sign that you gain quick wisdom. The third one is quick. Whenever doubts arise, wrong conceptions or unknowing manifest in our mind, we can dispel them quickly by gaining a perfect understanding of the actual nature of its object. This indicates that we have quick wisdom. So when we have doubts, when we have problems or wrong conceptions, when we check and investigate, we can get immediately the answer. We don't have to ponder over the thing for years and years and years, delaying our practice, delaying our meditations, we're doing it. Quick wisdom, sharp and quick. Then he can give you profound wisdom. If we can perfectly understand all the profound meanings of the scriptures without any difficulty, this indicates that we have profound wisdom. Then the wisdom of expounding the Dharma. If you meditate on wisdom, if you meditate on Jeremji, the best gift that you can give others is teaching the Dharma. Out of all the activities of a lama or a monk or a teacher, it can be giving material things to his students, it can be building centers, it can be building temples, it can be building stupas, it can be making offerings, prostrations, retreats, it can be conferring initiations, but the best gift that a teacher can give is expounding the Dharma. So if we focus, and then we ourselves to give Dharma to our friends, that's the best gift, the most supreme work. When we practice Jeremji, a sign of that is that when we are giving Dharma teachings, we need a special wisdom that realizes how much the listeners can understand which subjects are suitable for them. Moreover, we need to understand the correct order of the subjects we are going to talk about. What to say first, what to say next, and so on. We need to understand perfectly the meaning of all that we are going to talk about, and we need to understand special methods such as suitable analogies, good examples, and conclusive reasons that will clarify the meaning of others. In addition, we must also understand what qualities we need to become a perfect teacher and how to teach the Dharma and explain the Lamrim teachings. The wisdom of understanding all this is the wisdom of expounding the Dharma. So when you pray or practice to Jeremji and focus well, one of the greatest gifts you get is you have a special gift for teaching the Dharma, or you will get a special gift for teaching the Dharma. You will understand the Dharma clearly. You will never lose subjects. You will be able to say what's first, what's next. You will be able to bring three, four subjects into one category and teach it perfectly. You will understand the needs of your disciples. You will know how to talk to your disciples skillfully to bring them onto the Dharma. You will be able to use special methods, and you will be a master in giving examples that can give perfect conclusive reasoning to what you're talking about. You will be able to clarify the meaning, and you will be able to teach the Dharma that is so subtle and difficult, yet you can bring it to such a simple way down to earth that they can understand it. Then you will know how to be able to explain Namrin from left to right, back to front, from memory, perfectly. The wisdom of understanding all this is the wisdom of expounding the Dharma. So when you pray to Jeremji, when you worship Jeremji, and Jeremji is your main meditational deity, or you respect Jeremji very much, then you will get the special gift of being able to teach the Dharma. And this special gift should not be exclusive to masters or teachers. It should be all of us, all of us. So a sign that someone can teach the Dharma well is that they are focusing on Jeremji very much in their lives. And the purpose of that, if they can teach well, they can subdue and change, subdue the minds of others, change the minds of others, transform their mind, even if the person is stubborn, hard-willed, difficult, problematic, ignorant, stupid, slow, without merit, this teacher will be able to subdue the ones that are most difficult to subdue. So the ones that are most difficult to subdue, that has not been subdued or controlled by others or other lamas, because their karma is so strong, then this lama will have the power and ability to subdue those people with time, with energy, more than anyone else. This is a special practice and special feature of Jeremji. So, like myself and yourselves, we need this quality. We need to get it. Because we don't have to be a monk or a guru to teach others. We can teach our Dharma brothers and sisters and friends. We need to have this kind of wisdom to say the Dharma to them skillfully. So if we can teach Dharma to them skillfully, we can change their minds. So this gift only comes when you practice wisdom with us, especially Jetsun Gawa. Like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, when you listen to his talk, when you listen to his speech, you are in awe. You know he's practicing wisdom. You know he's focusing on Dzongpa for sure. Then the wisdom of spiritual debate, the sixth one. Since there are so many different views in the world, both religious and non-religious, which are contrary to the views which are presented in Dharma teachings, we need a special wisdom that understands the method for dispelling such views through skillful spiritual debate or discussion. In this way, we can lead people to correct spiritual paths. So, debate is very important, not just the monastery. You're able to debate with non-Buddhist practitioners, non-religious practitioners, with Buddhist practitioners with wrong views. You're able to debate with them, argue with them, and talk to them, and by debate and arguing, bring them to understand it. So this special skill again comes from the practice of the King of Dharma Tsongkhapa, because he himself sees and sees spiritual paths to liberation and enlightenment, the light by which they can dispel the darkness of ignorance and a spiritual guide from whom they can receive reliable advice. Therefore, composing authentic Dharma books bring immense benefit to many living beings and cause Buddha Dharma to remain for a very long time in this world. You may think there's so many Dharma books, why compose? Because times change, peoples change, examples change, situations change. So you must take the original principle teachings, rewrite them with the same theme, but with different examples. So that special gift can come from Jeremji. You may think, oh, why do some lamas want to compose books when there are already things on the certain subjects? The reason is to bring benefit to current sentient beings who may have different views and different ideas that are slightly different than examples given before, which may not attract them. So out of compassion to bring Dharma to more people, you need to compose Dharma books that bring benefit to others. And however, to compose authentic Dharma books, we need a special wisdom. We need perfect understanding of the subject matter and confidence to write about it. And we also need the wisdom or wisdom. We need the wisdoms that arise from listening, contemplating, and meditating on the subject that we will write. So what we write about, we have to have listened to it, thought about it, and meditated, and actually practiced it to compose. Therefore, this composition will have great blessings. With these, we can develop a special wisdom that has complete abilities to compose Dharma books. So Jeremji has that kind of benefit to gain the seven types of wisdoms. As we practice, we purify the negatives of the body, therefore health will improve. By Jeremji's meditation, you can improve your health by purifying the body. We will make a connection with Maitreya Buddha. When Jeremji passed away, he took rebirth as a bodhisattva, disciple of Maitreya, called Essence of Manjushri, Jamben Ningbo. Jeremji now is in Ganden Heaven or Tushida by the name of Jamben Ningbo, his incarnation, a root student of Maitreya Buddha. So, when we actually pray to Jetsun Baba, Because he is engrafted in heaven, because he is there with Maitreya, we have an indirect, rather we have a direct connection to Maitreya Buddha. So in some texts, I make it simple three. In some texts, when you practice Jiramji, you get the essence of four bodhisattvas. Vajrapani, Manjushri, and Kasavu. Vajrapani, Manjushri, and Kuan Yin, the fourth one is Maitreya. So when you practice Jiramji, you are also practicing great metta and love, which is embodied by Maitreya. Maitreya is a Sanskrit word for love. And then, Jiramji is predicted by Shakyamuni to become the 10th universal Buddha that appears in the world. Shakyamuni was the 4th. The next one will be Maitreya, the 5th. The 6th, the 7th, the 8th, the 9th, the 10th. The 10th one will be Jiramji. He will manifest in Bodh Gaya as the next living Buddha. So when you pray to Jiramji, you make a special connection to the 10th Buddha to appear in this world to turn the wheel of Dharma during the dark age. One will gain a connection and be born as a future Buddha, Maitreya, by this practice. So if you practice Jiramji even in a cheapskate way, not so hard, you will be born as Maitreya's disciple. So in the future, when Maitreya takes rebirth and you're still hanging around, still hanging around and the karaoke, having a good time, going out, you know, fighting with your friends, going on ego trips, all of us do that all day long, maybe hanging around in the toilet for a few hours, making ourselves up, I don't know. But in any case, if we're still hanging around in this beautiful samsara, which you all love, right? Otherwise we wouldn't be hanging around here. When Maitreya appears, by practicing Jiramji, I can go as far as to tell you, you will be born as one of Maitreya's disciples. And then, Powa practice need not be practiced separately. Powa is a transference of consciousness, to leave your body, to take rebirth in a Buddha land. In this case, Tushita heaven. So when you do this practice correctly, you do not need to practice Powa separately. So there is Powa Amitabha, there is Powa Vajrayogini. You don't have to practice separately, you can do it here, with this practice. And this Powa needs no initiation, and there's no danger. Most Powa practices, when you're successful, you receive signs, and death comes sooner, because you go to a Buddha heaven quicker. In Jiramji's, you do not die early. You live your life fully, and then go. On the basis of pacifying our negativity and obstacles and increasing our lifespan, merits of compassion, wisdom, and spiritual power, if we rely upon this practice, we shall gain realizations of Sutra and Tantra easily, eventually attain the state of union of no more learning of Buddhahood. If we follow the tradition of Jetsong Baba, we will be able to understand the commentaries of Buddha's teachings easily. If we follow Jiramji, we will be able to understand the teachings of Buddha much more easier than if we practice other deities, because he is wisdom incarnate. He is wisdom himself. A class of spirits such as Peha cannot obstruct us, cannot bother us. Outer obstacles include harm from humans and non-humans, changes from outer elements such as fire and water, different kinds of accidents lacking necessary conditions for spiritual practice will be protected from those when we practice Jiramji. Inner obstacles include sickness, strong delusion, and negative thoughts that arise from our mind will be lessened and eradicated by Jiramji's practice. Secret obstacles of ordinary appearance for grasping onto everything as inherently existing or not realizing emptiness, you will be able to realize emptiness, everything that's taught in the Samgyeong Heart Sutra, or Heart Sutra, if you practice Jiramji, because he is wisdom incarnate. One will have harmony, as Jiramji is the Bodhisattva Vajrapani, who pacifies the disharmonies of outer and inner things in our lives. So the Bodhisattva Vajrapani is the one that pacifies disharmonies coming from spirits and demons. Therefore, if you practice Jiramji, you will gain great harmony. If you have problem, if you have disharmony in your lives, by practicing him and following the precepts, you will gain great harmony faster than other meditational deities, because he is Vajrapani. Four separate practice and Maitreya will be accomplished at once. You will accomplish Kuan Yin Ma. If you love Kuan Yin Ma, you will accomplish Kuan Yin Ma. You will accomplish Wensu Posa Manjushri. You will accomplish Vajrapani, Jingang Posa power, and you will accomplish Maitreya. So four practices will be accomplished in one. Meditate, focus, pray to, have Jiramji, you make offerings, and you hold the precepts, and your object of offering is Jiramji. So if your main object of offering is Jiramji, four practices will be accomplished in one easy practice. One will be able to make merit all day long, all night, between the meditation sessions when you practice Jeremchi, when you do the practice of dissolving him into your heart, which we'll talk about. So if you do the practice of dissolving him into your heart, you will be able to practice Dharma 24 hours as Jeremchi, as a focal object. So these are some of the incredible benefits. And in fact, many lamas in Tibet will use Jeremchi and Jeremchi's practices to do action for others. There are 108 practices or 108 rituals composed in connection to Jeremchi that help others. Mahasita Menkamba and the Panchen Lama Benden Yishi composed 11 different instructions on ritual healing practices in conjunction with the Mitsama prayer. There are practices to make rain for crops, create rain, to gather clouds, to cure the drip disease, a physical disease caused by spirits that make you have fits and become uncomfortable. So Jeremchi has the power to cure epilepsy, fits, and polluted fits that come from spirits, to avoid harm from weapons, to prevent future diseases related to fits, to cure wind or lung disease. So any of you have Taofeng, you better get Jeremchi real fast. And I know some people with a lot of Taofeng, let me tell you. The minute they walk in, I have to put some coat on because it's windy. Then, if you have Taofeng, seriously, if you have wind disorders or wind diseases, Jeremchi is excellent. To cure physical and mental handicaps, and especially people who are a little fruity, I mean, not beyond health, a little bit fruity or bone near it, Jeremchi is excellent for curing that. Excellent. Nervous systems or spinal system diseases having to do with your nervous system, is very powerful to be cured by Jeremchi because Vajrapani is a specialty in that, and he is Vajrapani. Then, to pacify, to protect yourself against thieves, robbers, and enemies. It is said if you have a Jeremchi statue in your house and you pray to it, you make offerings, you have faith, it will protect you from thieves and robbers. Thieves and robbers will not come, or if they come, they cannot penetrate. If they penetrate, they cannot take anything. So it's said to have a Jeremchi in your house. If you pray and you have faith and you make offerings and you develop divinity, it will protect you from thieves and robbers and murderers. Just having a statue of him in your house. Incredible. Then, it will pacify obstacles for growing crops, for example, insects. There are special rituals to do Jeremchi's mantra. You have to be accomplished that you'll put his mantra and his picture in the fields. It will chase away insects. Put away all the pesticide company. No more pockets for that. Yes, in Tibet there was no pesticide. How do you think they grew crops? So there was one great lama who the area was infested with locusts. Infested. Tibet had regions where they're very fertile. And they invited this lama over to do rituals to pacify the locusts and get them to go away. So the lama, and they had very little food stored up this village, they invited the lama to come. For 7 days, the lama did no rituals. He hung around the temple there and ate. They brought all their food rations, they brought all their necessities and everything to him, and he ate up the village's food. I'm not kidding. Everybody was getting skinnier, the lama was getting fatter. And then when they asked him to do rituals, he says, okay, I'm hungry, bring me more food. So he almost ate up their supply of food. And then they said, please, Rinpoche, we don't mean to be disrespectful, but we have none left. Can you do something, please? And we'll give you more food. So the Rinpoche wrote on a piece of paper something, hid it inside a container, went to the fields, and planted it in the stick. The next day, all the locusts were gone. Then he said, see you later, I'm going off. And he took off, and they're like, that's it? And people criticized him. They hated him. They were like, what? We fed you, and you ate up all our food and took everything from us. And you, a Buddhist monk, didn't even do a prayer, a chant, a sutra, or even a rotten mantra to help us. And you just ate and disappeared. And took some for the road, too. So, the next day, they had that doubt that day about the lama. So the next day when the llama was already gone, the locusts were gone, they were amazed. They went to the fields, took out what he wrote. And you know what it said on the paper? It said, if I am Vajrapani, you all go. That's it. Very simple. Don't call me if you have locust problems, please. Because I'll write there, I'll challenge for this. If I am not Vajrapani, you go. Definitely it'll work. So yes, as simple as that. Why did he eat the food? He collected the merits for the people. He was Vajrapani. He visualized himself as the Bodhisattva Vajrapani. Everything that was offered to him, he offered to Vajrapani Buddha, who was a saint, and he collected a great amount of merits to purify the karma of the people, to make them suffer, to have problems, to have difficulties for 7 full days, psychological trauma, starvation, difficulties, to purify their karma so he can actually do the work. That was his reason for making those people suffer. That was a reason for him using up their things. So realize, lamas, that use your place, use your things, use your offerings. If they're realized or they do the tantra practice correctly, you will gain a great amount of merit. So if someone is making offerings to a highly realized lama, or to a lama, or to a monk, one should rejoice if one cannot do it. One should rejoice that one can do it. Because the more offerings they make, whether the lama needs it or not, it gives an opportunity for the giver to collect a lot of merits. A lot of merits. Especially if it's your root guru or your teacher or master and they make offerings. I'm not saying go out and say, yeah, make more offerings then. That's not the point. You should encourage them and you should rejoice. Oh, you make offerings of flowers? Wonderful, so wonderful. I rejoice. If the master is realized or practicing tantra correctly and they're making offerings and then you discourage them or you don't like it, or you yourself is miserly. Maybe you're miserly, you don't like it, and it hurts you that they do it and you stop them. The merits that they can offer to a realized lama, to a guru or their guru, you have stopped. Therefore, it is a root cause for you to create disharmony between you and yourselves, among yourselves, and create the karma to be away from the dharma, away from the lamas, and in the future to suffer poverty. So if someone is making offerings to the gurus or to the masters or anything like that, encourage them. Don't force them. Don't make them. Don't increase it. Let them offer what they like from their heart, even if it's a flower, if it's a whatever. Because the lamas definitely do not need it. It could be that they're allowing them an opportunity to collect merit that they otherwise would not. So when they collect more and more merit, they become closer and closer and closer and closer and more near to Dharma. Because I've heard last year, some people, I went shopping with someone, they wanted to buy something for their teacher, and one of their other friends said, no, that's expensive, why? Buy something cheaper. Anyway, Rinpoche don't need it. Can't remember who it was. Rinpoche doesn't need it. He has all those things. Why do you offer? So the other person stopped. So I intervened, although I shouldn't have, because, you know, it's their business. I said, no, don't think like that. Yes, Rinpoche has it. It's a statue or something, I can't remember. Yes, Rinpoche has the statue. He doesn't need it. But you don't say, don't offer it to him, because they will collect the merits. Even if you're Rinpoche, or even if the monk or whatever you're making offerings to is not enlightened and a simple monk, but the person making the offerings, not even you, but the person making the offerings, visualize them as enlightened and think of them as enlightened, and they offer it, they will get the merits of offering to an enlightened person. So one should encourage people to make offerings. Please, this is a dangerous subject. I'm not telling you to make offerings to me. I'm not telling you to make people make offerings beyond their abilities. That's not the point here. The point is, encourage people to make offerings toward the Dharma. Never stop them. Whether your motivation is good, whether your motivation is bad, if you stop them from making offerings to the 3 jewels, to the temple, to their gurus, to the sangha, oh, don't do this, don't do that offering, don't do this puja, don't do that, you are stopping them from creating positive karma. That actually will create the root causes for them to even have better things in the future. So always encourage it. And when you buy things to offer your guru, offer the Buddha, the Dharma, Sangha, never ever bargain for it. Because when you bargain for it, it's like you're giving it to an ordinary person, to a no one. So never ever bargain, because don't demean the object you want to make offerings to. So whenever I go shopping for Dharma thieves, I never bargain with the people. Even if they're cheating me, whatever, if they are, I go to another store, that's all. That's their choice, that's Dharma. I never ever bargain for Dharma things, Dharma items, and especially offerings. So if they want to give a bargain, that they will collect merit. So if we go someplace, we buy candles for offerings, they give us 10% or they give us a box free, accept it happily, don't think, oh, I got such a good deal, I saved some money, stupid. You should immediately think, oh, the 10% that they have given me a discount, I will pay for them. And then even the shopkeeper who's not interested in Zongbaba, you come and offer 90% from you, 10%, you let them collect the 10% karma indirectly. So you should think of very skillful ways to bring people onto the Dharma and plant seeds. So never ever discourage people from Dharma, from their masters, their gurus, from doing practices and meditations. Never ever discourage people from making offerings to any of the three jewels. Whether the object that they're making it to is enlightened or not is not the point. The point is they believe it's enlightened, it's their guru, it's their master, it's their monk, it's their loved ones. Encourage them, because they will collect the merit that they believe. And then when you make an offering, very important, you don't necessarily have to make it directly from the heart, you can pass it up to your guru. To anyone, for anything. Some of us are with very holy gurus, they're very famous gurus, and we're not always able to see them. But the object of making offerings to them is to collect merit, not to get an ego-stroking praise, not so people can see how wonderful you are. So if you give it to your gurus, like I've offered things to my gurus' attendants many times, other gurus, because I can't see them. I've offered things to the Dalai Lama through people. It doesn't matter, because I know I'm not attached. I know that I've collected the merit, which is the point of the offering. So always encourage other people to make offerings to their masters, to their teachers, in a gentle, skillful, and wisdom-filled way. Help them to collect merits. Hey, maybe they're not going to make offerings on the altar. Maybe they're not going to make offerings to a temple. Maybe they only like their teacher. Encourage them, because that's the only offerings that they'll ever make. Don't ever stop it. Don't ever tell them less. Just help them. That's why I always help people. People want to buy statues or malas. I personally go with them to the stores and buy them. That's why when they want to buy something for the temple, whatever, I tell you the truth, I hate shopping. I hate walking around the malls. I'll tell you the truth. I've been joking, I say I love it. I'll tell you the truth. It's tiresome, I don't have the time, and I get exhausted. And I feel embarrassed as a monk walking around the shopping center. Because you see this 6'2" maroon pole walking around with glasses, and everybody's like, what's that? And wherever I go, everybody stares at me and looks at me. I don't feel comfortable. I don't actually like shopping. And most of the things I buy from shopping places are for offerings, because what am I going to wear? You know, a Gucci bag? What am I going to do with that? So I actually don't like to go shopping. But sometimes when everything's overwhelming, I go for a break and walk around the malls because it's cool, there's a lot of things to see, and no one knows me, I hope. But I usually like to go shopping with people for one reason. I teach them and help them to buy offerings on what they need. So I don't like to go. But sometimes I just do it, especially if they want to buy Dharma things, things to set up their altar, to buy offering things, I will go. I want to encourage it. I want to spread it. And once they know, they can teach it to other people, and that's how it goes. Yeah, it's funny seeing a monk hanging around a shopping center. I admit. And I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed going to A&W. I'm embarrassed going to McDonald's. Really, I'm embarrassed. But sometimes there are people who are not going to learn Dharma in the temple. We need to get close to them skillfully by other ways. Oh, let's go hang out. Let's have a milkshake. And it's slowly one milkshake, two milkshake, one day, 2 week, 3 week. I've gotten some people onto the Dharma that way. I brought a few, 5 or 6 people onto the Dharma by shopping. No joke. I brought a few people onto the Dharma when I went shopping and met them as salespeople, just recently. When your motive is Dharma, anything can be used for Dharma. I'm not so enlightened that I'm like that, but I know that I have a good motive about. So when I go shopping and I go around, when I go with people, I think Mr. Lan knows I've been to the Bodhi bookstore millions of times, and I bring people all the time. The reason is because, number one, I love statues. Number two, I want to help them. I want to encourage them. And I want them to take out the one that they can really worship and do. And I love to do things like that. So, like an example of this guru, it's very important to encourage people to make offerings to their masters, to the Sangha, to the Dharma, to the temple, skillfully, with skill, and to see their position, and to make sure that it's correct. And at certain times, when they are actually suffering and they feel that they have to, you can skillfully say no. There are rare occasions you can say that. But use your wisdom. So anyway, this guru wrote, I am Vajrapani, you guys beat it, get out. That was it. So, definitely, Jayarti has the power to protect you from, because of protect fields. He has that ritual because he is Vajrapani. He has the power to pacify obstacles when traveling, because when you travel, you also pray to Vajrapani to protect you. So before you travel, it's very good to pray to Jayarti on your altar or an image or think about him if you can. Very good when you go on long journeys, come to the temple, make 3 prostrations to Jayarti, put $1 there to collect some merit, put 50 cents, 10 cents. The point is just an affinity. Bring a candle and offer it or leave it here. Or put 1 joss stick, bring some flowers. If nothing, never mind. Just come and prostrate. So when you go on long journeys, if you have one at home, fine. If you have a picture, fine. If you don't have time, think about it. If you can, come and make 3 prostrations to Jayarti, ask him for a good journey. And it will mitigate a lot of obstacles. Then altogether there are 108 rituals practices in conjunction with Jayarti. The practice of Mitama or Jayarti is very important for fulfilling both one's and others' wishes. Though not understanding the practice of Jayarti, we may think it's very simple and small. There was once a Mongolian minister who asked the Panchen Lama Fenden Yishi, one of his previous incarnations, to give him a small practice that he can do every day because he was otherwise very busy. The Panchen Lama asked him what kind of practice he wanted, and the Mongolian replied that he would like to receive the instructions on Mitama practice. The Panchen Lama was very surprised and said, how can you say that the Mitama is a small practice? There is no greater practice than this. It contains the meanings of the 84,000 teachings of the Buddha. We have passed this out yet? No. So it's very short. I wanted to give you the where it came from, how it came from, and the explanation. Then I'd like to go through. Oh, all the cards are here. You pass out? This one was typed out very kindly by Mr. Ganesha, who worked very hard on the computer. Went to Mr. Kaur's office and Xeroxed it. It was very, very kind, so we can all have this. Patsy? And I'm just giving you a short explanation. In the future, I'd like to have about 3 days dedicated to Jayarti. This is just a very, very short and quickie one. So when you do Jayarti's prayer, you can look inside this beautiful booklet. Please punch holes in it and include it into your prayer practice daily. It would be very nice. This itself is enough for all practice. This is a sadhana. A sadhana is a meditational technique that brings you to enlightenment. So this itself is a complete sadhana on Jayarti. All right? And it's very important to know that this original text was taught by Manjushri as part of the special scripture known as the Katam, emanation scripture. Both the Ganden Pajama and Mitsume prayers come from this scripture. So this scripture or this text was originally written by Manjushri. So you need to know the lineage where it came from. This practice was then extracted by Jetsong Gaba himself. These days the practice is known as Ganden Pajama, or the 100 deities of the joyful land in English. So some of us call it Ganden Pagyama, or in short, Lama Tsongkhapa Guru Yoga. Ganden Pagyama, Ganden means Tushita, or Tushita has 100 happy deities, which means bodhisattvas. So that is the joyful land with 100 deities or 100 bodhisattvas. So Ganden Pagyama means the practice that takes you to Tushita. The practice that will take you to Tushita. So Ganden Pagyama. Maybe put it over there. Okay, I'll keep on going. Here. So Ganden Pagyama is extracted from the Kadam emanation scriptures, which was taught by Manjushri himself. So this was incredible. Manjushri, then going down to Tsongkhapa, he extracted it directly himself. Then that was passed down to Jetsherab Senge, who was a great meditation master and the starter of Gyume Tantric College. He was the original one that started the Gyume Tantric College. And that was passed down to Dungaba Fenden Sangbo. That was passed down to Gyuchen Genyunbe. I'm reading to you, it's not in your book. Then that was passed down to Gyuchen Jashipa. That was passed down to Je Sanju Gyaso, to Sunrupa, to Dorji Sangbo. That was passed down to Kichu Sangye Gyaso. And then from that, it was all the way passed down to the great Pabongka Rinpoche. Pabongka passed it down to Trujan Rinpoche. Trujan Rinpoche passed it down to Song Rinpoche. And I received these teachings from His Holiness Swami Rinpoche, one of the lineage, the complete initiation, transmission, and description, and the Poa practice I received directly from His Holiness Swami Rinpoche when I was 17 Los Angeles, California. And then I received this without the Poa practice originally, the transmission, the teachings, and the whole thing from the great tutor of His Holiness, Great Ling Rinpoche. Ling Rinpoche is the first photo that you see there on the wall, the first one on the left. The small boy is Ling Rinpoche's incarnation. The picture next to the small boy is his previous life as a guru, as a Dalai Lama's guru. So you see the Dalai Lama's guru who had passed away, and that's his new incarnation, the great Ling Rinpoche. So I had received this great teaching, this great practice originally from the holder of the Ganden throne, Jetsong Baba, himself, Ling Rinpoche. So I received this from Ling Rinpoche when I was around 11 or 12 in Howell, New Jersey. Later, I received it from His Holiness Swami Rinpoche with the Poa practice. So my lineage comes from there, and you understand where it comes from. So I've stated the lineage, the time, and the place. All right? So this lineage is called the Se-gyu lineage. Se-gyu. And if you practice this correctly, it will help you destroy wrong conceptualization, wrong visualization, wrong thoughts towards your guru. So one of Jerimji's most important features is that when you practice him correctly, he will help you to destroy wrong view, negative view, misguided view, views that arise from negative karma that are overwhelming in regards to your guru. If that is done, you may get the Dharma, you may attain accomplishments, you may become enlightened. If we have wrong view, if we have wrong concept, or we act it out toward our guru, near our guru, behind our guru, or to others regarding our guru, or to their guru, what happens is that we throw ourselves away from enlightenment. Because without the guru, there is no Buddha, no Dhamma, and Sangha. So one of the features is that it helps to destroy delusional and wrong conceptual thought about our guru, therefore pleasing to all the Buddhas. So if we visualize our guru as a Buddha, and we receive teachings, and we receive practices, and we kowtow, we have faith and practice in Him, then we can gain enlightenment. If something is done that displeases us and we think otherwise, how can our guru be a Buddha one day and not a Buddha the next day? Definitely, it must come from our own wrong conceptual thought. And even if we feel that our guru is not a Buddha, but an ordinary person, then if other people believe he's a Buddha or a Buddha or highly realized, and we act in a way that discourages other people's actions toward our guru correctly, which I've experienced in the past in America, then we also destroy that person's faith and the root attainments. So the way we act toward our guru in public and in private is very important because it can influence others. And influence others in a negative way, we can collect very heavy downfalls for the potential benefits that they could have received. So we may sometimes, that's why I say all masters are good. I come across people who go to other teachers who, with all due respect, I have reservations about. But I never ever show it, I never ever say it, and I encourage it. Because they believe their gurus are Buddha, they find it pleasing, they find it beneficial. If I stop it, they don't become a Buddha. They don't get teachings. If they don't have the karma to get teachings from another guru that I like, and they get one from someone that I'm not sure about, that's not my problem, that's theirs. But because I'm not sure, and I stop them, it's very dangerous. Even if we meet a monk or some teacher that we find not so pleasing, unfortunately, and someone is attached to them and is getting teachings from them, and if you think out of good motivation, you say something to that person to stop them from going to help them, you in fact is destroying your Dharma practice. Because once you destroy a relationship with one guru, whatever gurus you go to in the future, you will not gain attainments until that is repaired. That is in the 50 verses of Guru Devotion, Guru Panchasika, and that is represented by Dhat, Naropa, Tilopa, Milarepa, Marpa, hundreds and hundreds of times. So it's very important that we show the deepest respect to our gurus as an example to others, and especially for training our mind. And then if people want to do anything in relation to their guru, whether you like it or you don't like it, you should allow them, you should encourage them, because you should help them to collect merit. Collecting merit is not the object. It is their thought, it is their good intention, it is their good motive. So the object that they make it to, if they have good intention, good visualization, and good faith, they will collect the merit that is necessary. So that's very, very important. Jerimji's practice, it says here, is very instrumental for destroying wrong conceptualization and projections and expectation of our guru, which can cause us to lose faith, which can cause us to unnecessarily lose faith, lose confidence, lose trust, and lose the wish to serve and help. So JRMT is very, very good for that, for destroying wrong conceptualization. And it says that as one of the features because that is the key. If we have wrong concept, wrong action, wrong thoughts, misguided thoughts about our teacher, and we encourage that in others, we can lead and we can get other teachers, definitely. There are teachers in temples everywhere, but we will gain no attainments with all due respect, and that is clearly stated. Clearly stated. Because you have blocked someone else's attainment, you have blocked your own. Very important. Just understand this one. And then it's called the Segyu lineage because most of the lamas that pass this lineage from one to another were from an area in Tibet called Se. So Gyu is lineage, Se is Se lineage. So it means Segyu means most of the lama came from this area. And this area was in the central region near Chashi Longbo Monastery, the monastery of the great Panchen Lama. So Segyu lineage means this lineage that comes from Manjushri. That comes from Manjushri, Tsongkhapa, Jesira Senge, Dongkhapa, Benden Sambo, Yendunbe, Jashipa, Sanju Gyatso, Tsunrupa, Roji Sambo, Kedru Sangye, Chijan Rinpoche, Songchi. Then to myself, most of the lamas, well not me of course, came from the Se area of Tibet, near Jashinobo in Utsang, or central Tibet. So that area is called Se. Se. So Yu is lineage. Se Yu means the lineage of Se. Or the area of six, very easy. Just so you know clearly, clear information. So, very important, I just found this as a last statement, destroying wrong conceptualization of our guru. And I need to stress that with all of you, with your own personal gurus, whoever they might be, that encourage others toward their gurus, encourage guru devotion, encourage practice to whoever their guru might be, wherever their guru might be, because the minute you discourage or you say something or you gossip, and you destroy their faith for their guru, whatever the guru might be, you have put them to the three lower realms. And it is that intense. So if you really have compassion for beings, irregardless of what you feel or think, you should encourage, you should help, you should assist. So when you meditate on Jeriji, it's very easy because most of our gurus are monks. So when we visualize our guru as Jeriji, the blessings are simpler and quicker and easier. Much easier, much quicker. So the first line is invitation, and it says here, from the heart of the Lord of the Godly Devas emerges a brilliant white cloud like a mass of fresh yogurt. Atop sits Tsongkhapa, all-knowing King of Dharma. We request your coming to this place along with the great disciples. Before you do that, you should take refuge. We recite Namo Guruve, Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dhamma Sanghaya. And refuge is a whole different talk. Most of us has received a meditation on refuge, so those four words have a lot of meaning. So you take refuge. In short, with your mother on the left. I'm sorry tonight's a little late. Please forgive me. Let it be marathon since tomorrow's Sunday. And anyway, tomorrow will be not sleepy because it's Sambala. So please forgive me, all right? Let's take a 5-second stretcher to get up. I'll go through this real fast, and when I come back, we'll go through it more. It seems very beneficial on your altar. I encourage you to have statues, the bigger, the better. The more statues, the bigger it is, the more merit. Every single atom that's contained in a statue is the merit that you can have. So the bigger, the better. Don't think, oh, I'm a lay person, I cannot have a big one, I'm not a temple. Wrong view, wrong view. The bigger, the better. The bigger, the better. And then dress them well. Offer beautiful brocades, offer the best jewelry, offer the best items that you can offer. The what you can offer within your budget is the best. So you can offer only shells, glass, imitation stones, that is the best. If you can offer diamonds and turquoise, that is the best. If you can offer diamonds and turquoise, you offer shells. No comments. So you should offer the best. And then those stones that we have offered on JRMG has been meticulously and beautifully stitched by many, many devoted disciples that worked very hard. One of the people that stitched with Ms. Lim, who stayed up 3-4 nights consecutively without sleep, stitching that up for Wisdom Center here. So Ms. Lim worked very hard. In fact, Ms. Lim is the one that ordered the statues in Delhi. It took her 2.5 days to go from South India to North India. And then her assistant was Mama Jenny, so you can imagine what an assistant that was, right? The assistant needed the assistant. Anyway, Mama Jenny went up there, and also Chia on the first trip, and Miss Lin had to go up twice. She ordered the statues, and the Indians, not easy. It took 2.5-3 months to order them in the hot heat of Delhi. From her cheapskate hotel, she had to take one hour and a half rickshaw to the place, order it, and then wash it, and then pack it. And then before packing it, she had to consult different artists to bring them over, feed them, give them lunch, and tell them they're wonderful fabulous. They got their Picassos, right? And then they'll do the work well. And then after painting, they had to be covered well, packed well, and she had to pack them themselves into crates and boards, transfer them herself to the transport place, and carry them and send them here. When they were sent here, they were brought over here, and then Monam worked very hard. Unruly Monam with the committee here and friends worked very hard to roll hundreds and hundreds of sutras inside. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Many holy mantras rolled small with incense inside and filled in. And there are mantras for the head, for the speech, for the heart, for the stomach, for the legs, well, everything. And they were completely filled and beautifully blessed by the protector who came into trance. And then they were again repainted with gold because it came a little scratched. And the clothes was ordered from South India. The jewels were bought from South India and North India and combined. And then it took a lot of effort and work for this holy and very beautiful image to be here. So we should be very happy because I think it's the biggest image of Tsong Baba in Malaysia, if I may say. So this was done combined by a lot of people's hard work. And the hardest worker was me running around with my black gold begging for donations. So I wanted it for us here. I wanted the statue of Jerichi for us here. And I planned it 5-6 months back. And I asked a lot of people for donations. And one group was very kind because I wanted Wisdom Center, which represents Jerichi, to have a beautiful Jerichi here for people to come and worship, to pray. And I know that in the future, at that time, I would teach you about Jerichi, let you know the benefits, and after you know, you will pray. So you would like a beautiful object offering. And look at it. It's just absolutely fabulous. It's absolutely beautiful. It's absolutely wonderful. So in the future, if people would like, and also do donations to put gold on Jerichi's body, offer gold on the two lotuses, etc. And every 2 years, as the clothes fade, we will sponsor new clothes. If people like to sponsor that, we collect merit, it's excellent. And then remove the jewels and resew it onto the new clothes. And then the old clothes will be cut up and distributed to people to put in packets, to hang in cars, you can hang in places to protect you. That's how we use ingredients for protection, because it's been worn. It's very, very powerful and very, very excellent. Very, very excellent. Alright? So this Jerichi is a beautiful and most precious object of offering. And even the people who sponsored and worked so hard and had cleaned, maintained, and made this beautiful altar collect so much merit, because it's as meritorious as making Jerichi. Look how beautiful, look how fabulous. And I am not overpraising because it's my center or I belong to the center. I am telling you the truth. To have such a fabulous, and the bigger the Jerichi, the more powerful, the stronger, it will also uplift the economy of the area. This is no joke. This is not a joke. So we should encourage people to make a lot of Jerichis, to have small, big, large, everywhere. We should buy Jerichis, sponsor Jerichis, and give to our friends. As much as possible, explain the meaning and let them know what is the benefit of Jerichi. And that way we can help them. And then we ourselves should make an effort toward people trying to get Jerichis, because we help them to get harmony, blessings, protection in spirit, wisdom, compassion, etc., etc. So we should go out of our way and endure difficulties for the sake of people to get Jerichi, understand Jerichi, practice Jerichi, and spread Jerichi with compassion, of course, with compassion. So, from the heart of the Lord of the Gandhin Devas. Lord of the Gandhin Devas, that word, Lord of the Gandhin Devas, if you have a pen, you should mark that as Maitreya Buddha. So the reigning king of Tushita heaven, or the reigning king of Gandhin heaven, is Maitreya. So from the heart of the Gandhin Devas refers to Maitreya Buddha. A brilliant white cloud, like a great mass of fresh white yogurt, atop sits Tsong Baba, all-knowing king of Dharma. So from the heart of Maitreya Buddha, who's in charge of Tushita, you'll see in this photograph, above here is Gandhin heaven, an illustration. You see a white cloud coming from the center, from Maitreya Buddha, coming down. And the cloud opens up. This was Mr. Ganeshan's idea to put this here so that everyone could have a good illustration, good picture. He worked very hard to make this. So you see beautiful Maitreya Buddha there, sitting there elegantly, wonderful. And from his heart, a white stream of cloud comes out, which means that Jeremy's essence is the same as Maitreya's essence, or else he wouldn't be coming out of Maitreya's heart. If you drew a picture of me, I would probably be emanating out of A&W or something. I don't know. A hamburger, a milkshake, a cheesecake. So we have a wonderful here sitting amid white clouds like a great mass of fresh yoga. So the clouds are fresh and white and beautiful. And this cloud is not just an ordinary cloud. It is the emanation of Maitreya's mind, coming out in the form of a cloud, supporting Jeremchi. So Jeremchi is the mind emanation of Maitreya in this case. We request your coming to this place along with your great disciples. So very important, we have beautiful offerings set out if possible. We have incense billowing because we're inviting an enlightened being. When you recite this word, you should be dressed correctly, well, not sitting in a funny position, and you should have offerings and incense, because when you say this word, Jeremchi will actually come. So when he comes, he sees you in shorts, scratch, picking your nose, you know, kind of smelling your armpit, no bath, you know, kind of just sitting there like picking your teeth when you recite that, and I gotta do it because that crazy woman told me to. Jeremchi really comes. So I don't think you want him to see you looking like that. So I think if you're smart, you put on your party dress and your tuxedo and do the prayer and wait for him. But seriously speaking, you should be clean, dressed well. You should be in a clean environment. You shouldn't have your clothes strewn all over the place, sloppy things, unclean. Even your coffee table should be clean when you recite it. I'm serious. Because Jeremchi will actually appear. So when we clean the temple, when I clean my room, when I tell my monks to clean up, I don't clean up because people are coming or I like to clean, although I do like it. Because I'm always doing some prayers, and the deities come. So when the deities come, I want the place to be very, very clean. That's why I'm very particular, the walls and everything are clean, because it's an offering to the Buddhas. That's my main reason. When you call them, they come. They come, and instantly. I have living proof of that. I have living proof, I'll talk another day. They definitely come. If there's an oracle or medium, the minute you invite them, they will come. Don't think, oh, I say come forth and the medium puts on an act. Sometimes I don't say anything, I just sit there and say, can you come forth? I want to talk to you. I think immediately takes trance. I've seen it many times, I've done it. I've had my medium take trance in cars. So I'm in the front seat and I say, I need to ask you something, I think it might come forth. In the back I hear someone screaming and waving their arms and I'm getting a slap. Rah! From the front, yes. And I know that they can hear me. I have proof of that many times. It just happened 3 days ago. So when you say that verse, Jeremchi is coming, be dressed decently, well, proper, clean, be respectful, have at least an incense lit. If you're doing your living room or whatever, turn your television off. Make sure your coffee table is clean, doesn't have empty cups. Be respectful of Jeremchi. The more respect, the more clean you show him, you collect the karma to be born in a clean environment in the future. So don't be so easy about it. This is Dharma, this is for your enlightenment. So you visualize Jeremchi sitting on a beautiful cloud. On a beautiful cloud with his two disciples. Respectful, the right one. The one on our left is Gyatsup Rinpoche. Everybody please repeat, Gyatsup. Gyaltsa. G-Y-A-L. T-S-A-B.
T-S-A-B.
Oh, it's here. Gyaltsa Rinpoche. And the other one is Khetru Rinpoche. Gyaltsa. Khetru. Gyaltsa Rinpoche is an emanation of Panyin also. And Khetru Rinpoche is an emanation of Vajrapani. And Jeremchi himself is Wensuposa and the other two deities. So it's a very powerful combination. So you have a trio here. Alright? So you visualize in front of you, God in heaven. Beautiful. Beautiful and fabulous. It says here, to the north of this continent, Nam Jambudipa, is Mount Meru, the center of the cosmology, which has four step levels. On top of Mount Meru is the land of the 33 heavens, the highest, the second abode of the desire realm gods. In the space above this is a land without combat, the third abode of the desire realm gods. And in the space above this is a joyful land, the fourth abode of the desire realm gods. Just above this is a god realm, is a pure land of Maitreya heaven. So above the highest realm of samsara, right above this is Maitreya heaven. The beings who abide in Sushita or Gandhin heaven, Maitreya's land, do not experience aging, sickness, or any other suffering.